Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. How about that game last night, Bruce?
Yeah, how about that game last night? Another home loss. Another disappointing night for the faithful, or what's left of their faith. But major news breaking, I guess, during and after the game, when word came down that the GM has been turfed and we're apparently heading on a new direction.
Interesting. So Bob Nicholson held his press conference today, and he said a lot of interesting things. Lots of buzzwords coming out of that press conference, Bruce. Blip, overripe, character, heavy hockey, something in the water, patience. So let's go through all of those buzz things, and let's start with the juiciest quote from Bob Nicholson about the something in the water. And let me just find it here, because that really stuck out. This came after Rob Tichkowski of the Journal asked a really good question, or put a really interesting fact to Shirelli, that the Oilers in the last 10 years have had 8 coaches and 3 GMs, now going to have a fourth. And Nicholson then said, quote, "We're not going to be in a real rush to get a general manager. We have to get the right one. If that takes us time, because we have to look at all parts of this organization, I want to emphasize again, we got some real good players. We got some real good staff, but there's something in the water here in Edmonton that we don't have right. And we got to get that figured out." Bruce, what is that something in the water?
Well, I thought it was Kool-Aid powder, and I thought it was already there, but
you mean people drinking the Kool-Aid, or?
Yeah. Well, too many of us have been for too long, maybe. But it's kind of a bizarre statement. I'm sure the people in the City Water and Purification Department were probably not too thrilled hearing that and seeing it going out in headlines and stuff. But obviously just a turn of phrase, but it makes you wonder if maybe they should take a step back and look at, well, what are the common denominators? What has been constant throughout these years of all these coaches and all these GMs? And, you know, what is it about this organization that has been stagnant and not changing? And that might involve a look in some of the executive offices, and even all the way up to the owner, if you want to take it there.
I think the something in the water between 2008 and 14 was Darrell Cates' running of the team. There was no buffer between him and hockey ops. He was running it with his buddies, his old buddies. And you know, Kevin Lowe had been a very good GM for some time, and Craig McTavish had been a good coach. But that it was too buddy-buddy, and the owner was too involved in the decisions. And they turned the page when they brought in Nicholson to have a more to have a businessman running the whole show again, to have hockey ops reporting to a businessman, to have someone between hockey ops and Cates. This was a very good idea. And I think Nicholson made a very good choice on his coach and GM at the time. He hired two experienced hockey people with great resumes in Shirelli and McClellan. Turns out that Shirelli had the wrong answer. But he had the right pedigree. He had the right experience to be successful here in Edmonton. He just had the wrong answer, and that's going to happen now and then. But so that was something in the water then. Here's what scares me, though, Bruce. Nicholson's now talking about, he sees the main issue as character. Something about character in the dressing room. Please, and I think that might be the something in the water. Right.
Yeah.
Now.
No kidding.
I think something in the water might be years and years and years of people talking about character in the dressing room. Like, it's like blame the millennials here, and not understanding that the real problem, Bruce, is a lack of talent on this team. The something in the water on this team right now is that they stressed character, they stressed heavy hockey, they stressed big toughness, and they went in the exact wrong direction. They need players who can skate and pass the puck and move the puck. This team is terribly slow. You can't win with a team stacked with below average NHL skaters and terrible players at the NHL level. That is the something in the water, is a lack of talent on the Edmonton Oilers. And for Nicholson to go on and on about character, I get it that I'm not one of the people that discount character. It is crucial in life. It is crucial in success. And I've seen it again and again in my own line of work, where people shoot themselves in the foot because of their character, because they don't know how to get along with other people, because they don't know how to work hard. I get all that. And I believe that that is a big factor. But talent is also crucial. And when we're watching a team that was put together partly for character reasons, but they can't play because they don't have talent. They can't skate and they can't make a pass. And for Nicholson not to stress that, he better look again at what he thinks the issue is, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe there is some big issues in the dressing room. I don't know. Maybe there is something really bothering Hitchcock and him. But man, you got to get better talent on this team.
Well, older people have been questioning younger people's character for as long as I've been, since I was a young person myself.
Well, they were
right. They've been questioning their choice of music and their haircuts and, you know, all kinds of things like that. I'm thinking some of the backwards looking at the success of the 1980s Oilers would be at the successes by the time they built and developed that. What clearly was a character group, at least on the ice, but along the way, there was plenty of questions raised about their character in Sports Illustrated, as you well know, being involved to some degree in one of those stories. And weak-kneed wimps, it took a while for the team to grow together. But what that team always had over and above character was talent, speed and talent. And yet you hear them always talking, taking this culture character. Well, how many steps have Oilers taken to fix the culture around here? I'll name you three, and I'm sure I could name you 10 if I thought about it. But I'll go with Andrew Ferentz, Dallas Eakins, and Milan Lucic, all brought in to address the culture in the room. Now, how did those acquisitions work out for the Oilers, David?
Didn't Pat Quinn talk about the need for crust or toast or something, and then McTavish talked the need for gumption or Tambellini talked about the needs for poise, and like, there's always some stupid buzzword. And again, like, these things really are important, but you got to have talent. You got to be able to play hockey. And I just think this is the something in the water right now, Bruce, man. He is focused on the wrong thing. Now, I'm not saying if there's a few grumpy players who can't play and are causing trouble in the dressing room, I have no idea what the set, but I mean, if they think the problem is that Jesse Puljujärvi's too immature, that's ridiculous. I mean, at least that guy has some talent. They got to bring it out of him, but they got to bring in more players who can move the puck. They got to bring in more players who can skate. This is just, and the Oilers of the 80s, they didn't have character. They had attitude. They had arrogance.
That's true. Yes,
their character was true. Arrogance. And it was coming out of Glenn Sather.
Yep.
And you know, these weren't good boys, and these weren't upstanding pillars of the community at the time. I mean, they weren't horrible people in any way, but they were highly, unbelievably skilled hockey players who brought it to the ice with fast skating, unbelievable passing and shooting. And that's what the Oilers have to bring in, some more players who can play the damn game and drop this character nonsense. It's not nonsense, but just, it's not number one on your list,
It's not number one.
It is not number one on your list. You got to get some players who can skate and pass and score.
Yeah. And if you think Jesse Puljujärvi is immature, well, guess what? That's what your farm system is for. You think he's immature, why would you bring him to Canada as an 18-year-old kid and stick him in the NHL right off the bat and expect him to be a productive player? You know, there's other ways to go about it. Now, thankfully, Bob Nicholson did talk about some of these things when he talked about slow cooking some of the talent that's on the vine, and maybe that's later on down our list here, but it did come up. But I have to admit that the culture, character comments were the ones that stuck in my craw right off the hop in watching that.
And usually that doesn't bother you or I too much. Like, it bothers some people a lot. But it's getting obviously under our skin right now.
It's bugged me for quite a while. I mean, talent. It's about talent. get the talent, develop the character. You know, Ben Sather, to his eternal credit, maybe it was because he was a younger man himself when he was a coach just out of the playing ranks, but he let boys be boys, and at the same time, he gave them some responsibilities in the community. As I recall it, he insisted that each player on the team take up some community cause, whether it be the Christmas Bureau, like Kevin Lowe did so ably for so many years, or what have you. They all had sort of one sort of anchor within the community, but otherwise they were given plenty of freedom until they utterly screwed up. When they won, they could do what they wanted. When they lost, well, then there might be a price they had to pay, to borrow Peter Shirelli's vernacular for a second.
Shirelli. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. He made a fundamental miscalculation. He built the Maginot Line when he needed to bring in Tiger tanks. You know, he was fighting yesterday's war in today's battlefield, and he applied what was working in the NHL, had worked for about 4 or 5 years, and he just thought that's going to continue to work forever. And he built this big, heavy hockey team, and Nicholson addressed that correctly, saying, you know, Shirelli wanted to make this a tough barn to come into and a scary team to play. And I can see when you're facing Anaheim, St. Louis, and LA that was a mighty attractive proposition. I certainly bought into it myself, as did most fans. Majority of fans at the time bought into that, but it was the wrong prescription, and time to move on from that. But it seems like they're doubling down on it. Like, anyway.
Well, I bought into it to the degree that I've been watching the Oilers get pushed around in those buildings that you talked about for years. And for sure, they'd gone too far one way. At one point, the Oilers had three skilled right wingers in Jordan Eberle, Alex Shemsky, and Nail Yakupov, who all weighed 184 pounds. And then they had, literally, and the fourth guy, whoever was the fourth line right wing, might be Leonard Petrell or Ben Eager or Darcy Hordichuk or some, you know, huge guy. But he got 5 minutes ice time a game. And their top nine forwards, at one point that I did a review on it, they didn't have one of their top nine forwards who was the NHL average weight. And I think they had one of their top four defensemen who was at that time. And so obviously that had to be addressed, but I think it just went way too far in the other direction, where almost all of the guys that were acquired, with one or two exceptions, Andre Sekera, one or two exceptions, but most of them were like 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", behemoths. And even as that temporarily, when everybody was healthy for a season, everything was fine. But anytime, they've never had the depth that they could survive any kind of injuries. And even this year, the one main injury to Oscar Klefbom, and you could argue also Sekera. That was a cascade of hurt. They just don't have the depth to fill in. And that is a lack of talent. You can bring in all the Brandon Mannings that you want, but that's not going to address the lack of talent. I'm sorry.
So let's talk a little. I did like some things that he said. I didn't like that part of it in particular, but I did like some of the things that he said, that Nicholson said. And I think, first of all, I've liked the patience that he showed with both McClellan and Shirelli. And I think that since he's taken over, there's been, you know, he did move out the, he came in 2014, Nicholson. So he was there when?
2014. He got promoted right after the McDavid, but he was already inside the organization.
Anyway, but his time starts with Shirelli and McClellan, really. Mm-hmm. They're his first hires. And he waited them out. He gave them both, I think, adequate time to prove themselves. Both the coach and the GM were fired at the right moments at the right time. And I know a lot of people would have fired either one of them, particularly Shirelli, before then, but I think he did it at the right time, because stability is important in an organization. You have to be sure you're making the right call, that this guy is a failure. And we certainly had information of that at the end. I also like his patient approach that he's taken right now in hiring. He's not immediately appointing Keith Gretzky. He's making him the interim guy. And he says he's going to have a wide search. He's going to go within the organization, find answers, and he's going to have a patient search for the right GM for today's player. And that sounded really good to me, Bruce. I think they need a full job search, not just pick the fancy name that comes up. You know, like a lot of people for the new coach are thinking Joel Quenneville, and maybe that is the right guy, but maybe it isn't. Like, I don't know. And for the coach and for the GM, I have no idea. Like you hear, like every hockey guy and every hockey writer is now throwing out the name of their best friend GM. You know, Steve Yzerman. You know, again, Yzerman, maybe that is the right guy.
Good luck with that.
I doubt he would come here, and I wonder about Quenneville. But this team still does have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. It's not exactly an unattractive. It's got this beautiful new building. It's got a rabid hockey market, too rabid perhaps, but they should be able to get a really good person to come here. And I like the fact that there's a hockey guy, there's a businessman in charge of making that decision, and he's going to go through the right steps and make it. I have confidence in Nicholson to do that. He's been very methodical, it seems to me, in everything he's done, including the firing of the coach in the gym, which some people didn't like. But I think he's going to be methodical in hiring, and I like that.
I'd argue that he wasn't that methodical when he hired Peter Chiarelli. I mean, Bob Nicholson was promoted to CEO on Monday. The McDavid lottery was won on Saturday, April 18th. Nicholson assumed CEO's chair on Monday, the 20th. By Friday, he'd hired Peter Chiarelli a few days after Chiarelli had been fired from Boston. And the sense that I remember having at the time was that there wasn't really an in-depth search, that they a qualified candidate come available and they grabbed him, rather than pursuing spin you can put on the patients when it came. And so whoever the new guy is, he's starting with one hand tied behind his back in terms of his flexibility and maneuverability under the cap structure is very limited.
Yeah, that's a good point about the Chiarelli hiring. I think, the guy certainly had the experience, and I think he was probably preaching the right thing that everyone in Edmonton was wanting to hear and mm-hmm. thinking was true, that this team needed to get bigger and tougher to compete. At the same time, you're right. I don't know that there was an extended interviewing process where they talked to 5-10 different candidates to get their take on the assessment of the organization, what's right with it, what's wrong with it. This is the interesting thing when they go through this process, which it sounds like mm-hmm. they will, for both GM and coach, one would hope, is that, you know, they can actually get some critique, outside opinion of the organization from the 5 to 10 guys who might want this job and the 5 to 10 people who might want the coach's job. And that's got to be very useful to get, you know, they're going to sugarcoat it a little bit because they want to get hired, but they have to tell the truth. They've got to present how are they going to come in and fix this organization.
Right, absolutely.
Man, I you're right. And I don't think they did that. Maybe they would have heard something else at the time when they hired Chiarelli. Maybe they would have heard someone saying, you know, this heavy hockey thing, its day has come and gone. You need to be tough, and we will be tough for sure. But what we really need is that this is going to be a speed game. Maybe they would have heard that from someone. I don't know. So that's a good point that you made there, Bruce. He also talked about that after character and grit is overripe. And even Detroit, you know, the masters of overripe have been rushing players to the NHL. It seems when teams are stacked with really good veteran players, they have the luxury of not being rushing young players to the NHL. But maybe there is this team out there who does it right. I don't know. Maybe Nashville or some team puts all its players in the minors for the right amount of time. Anyway, Nicholson went back to that, and there seemed to be a suggestion possibly that there was a disconnect between him and Chiarelli on this. And Kyler Yamamoto is now in the minors, perhaps just for the AHL.
As of today, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with Puljujärvi, because Hitchcock has made it clear he wants to develop this player at the NHL level. And I'm not convinced that that isn't the right decision. I think it may well be, because I think Puljujärvi holds his own at this level and is coming on. I see things in his game personally that I like. And I think that if they can... Last night, I swear, Bruce, Puljujärvi had a different line every time he stepped on the ice. Every single time he stepped on the ice, he was out with different players. It was preposterous. You know, this line of Nugent Hopkins, Kyra, and Puljujärvi, I don't know if Hitch is going to change the way he does things, but man, just stick with that line. And I think you can develop Puljujärvi. But anyway, to get back to the overripe thing, it sounds like Jones, maybe this is Jones being sent down, Yamamoto being sent down. This is the idea. I'm not against it, although I'm not against players who can play in the NHL, I think Jones can be on your third pairing right now. And I think Puljujärvi can be on your third or second line and hold his own and do well. So what's your take?
Well, I think I wrote in my player grades last night that Puljujärvi played a minute or more with 14 different teammates in the game last night. Like he was getting, as you say, just shuffled from pillar to post. He started the game on the McDavid line and Yamamoto came out and had two hits and that put him up onto the McDavid line. And from there, everything just changed. McDavid had six different wingers in the game last night. And only really started clicking when they moved Leon back up to his line, which some people will say that's bad on Leon for not producing without McDavid. And yet you could make the same argument the other way.
McTavish had an electrical powered blender. I think Hitch has a nuclear powered blender.
Uh-huh.
Got this huge reactor that powers his blender for the lines. So speed that it moves at. Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea, Bruce. I think it's a bad idea. And Drew Remenda pointed this out the other night, and I think Drew's right. It's too much mixing it up, man. Like, pick some lines and stick with them for a game.
Yeah, well, my Kyler Yamamoto comment, I also mentioned that Hitchcock had the blender on puree last night. They just really had them moving about. And the thing with, this is where the organizational impatience rears its head again. Remember they had both Yamamoto and Puljujärvi up at the start of the season. And a lot of nights, one of them be in the lineup and one of them be out of the lineup. And they were kind of competing for the same position. And then they sent them both down at the exact same time. But Puljujärvi was only down there for like four games, and then Hitchcock got hired and called him right up. And then you had one of them like consistently on the team and the other one consistently in the minors, which seemed to work. But then Chiarelli went and waived Valentin Zhukov and brought up Yamamoto, and I haven't seen much sign that Yamamoto is ready to take that next step. Why not leave the guy down there for two or three months and, per season if need be, and become overripe. I don't know, the ripest thing about that the comment itself is pretty ripe, if you ask me.
Just such a meaningless, such a meaningless thing to say. Like, there are some players who are perfectly fine breaking in the NHL at a younger age and some who aren't. And, it
helps if they got good teammates.
Like Caleb Jones obviously really benefited from a full year undisturbed playing in the AHL last year and started out this year. Mm-hmm. But, he's been there a year and a half. I think he's ready to play third pairing. The problem with the Oilers, of course, is they thrust him into the top pairing or the second pairing, and he gets in over his head. But I'm okay with Caleb Jones being on your third pairing. I'm okay with Jesse Puljujärvi being on your second or third line and second power play. If they can handle it, and I think they can. Yamamoto, they seem to love Yamamoto. I can see moments where I really like his play, but he looks to me like a player who could really benefit from being in the AHL. Mm-hmm. So, at the same time, I'm the guy who really wants a faster team. And the only way they're going to get a faster team this year, Bruce, is by calling up guys from the AHL and going with the kid line. And, I don't mind if you bring them up, if you use them consistently on the same line, in the same role, in a place where they're not in over their heads, and if they can prove they're not over their heads, I'm good with that. I think that can work. So I guess I have mixed feelings about this the whole concept and development of players. I just think the problem is thrusting players into roles that they're not qualified for. And that means Justin Schultz in a top pairing role, means Caleb Jones in the same.
Whereas the first line of
third pairing, it would have been fine. If Caleb Jones is third pairing, it's fine.
It means the first line of Nugent Hopkins with Hall and Eberle when they're all 20 years old. Or it means the first line of Gagne with Cogliano and Nilsson when they're all 20 years old. You know, I'm exaggerating, but not by much. Like, they do tend to thrust their talented guys into a top, or certainly second top, you know, top six, top four role on forward or defense. And the amount of time to sort of develop into that has been minimal. And the problem is that those guys are usually among the best guys available because they have never had the depth. Like, the thing with a team like Nashville is they can bring in a guy, a good player, and work him in on the fourth and third line because their top two lines and their top two pairings are set. And if a guy gets hurt for a while and they have to promote somebody into that line, well, guess what? He's playing with two other very good players. He's not, you know, one guy trying to carry two subpar line mates. It's, you know, one young guy maybe trying to fill in and playing with two guys who more than carry their weight. Well, that's a good scenario for a young player. But it's just not something that's readily available here in Edmonton and has not been for over a decade.
Yeah, they have no, you know, I can see why they put Caleb Jones in the tough minutes because they had no one else could possibly handle it. So, I mean, you give it a try. You see, you roll the dice, you see how it works. Mm-hmm. All righty. Anything else, Bruce, that comes out of that? So Keith Gretzky. Keith Gretzky is the interim. He's the interim one. Of the Gretzky family. And, you know, when you look at his draft record and the three Boston drafts that he had and the two Oilers drafts that he's done some really good work running the amateur draft. Although the weird thing about guys who do a good job of running the amateur draft is it doesn't always last. I find that I think that's a really hard job with a high burnout. And a lot of them, like David Conte in New Jersey or whoever the guy was in Detroit, they have like 5, 6, 7 years, a great run. Mm-hmm. And then they can't do it anymore because it's just too much. It's too much damn work. It just takes an intensity, a level of work and sacrifice to rate all these players, to watch them all. And I think they fall off. So just because Gretzky's done well at that, I hate to be a negative Nelly on this, but I've seen it. Barry Fraser.
I was just going to say, he says hi from his villa in Mexico.
Yeah, exactly. It's such a hard, it's like he was the worst. He went from the single best genius draft wizard of all time to one of the worst drafters for the next 15 years. Mm-hmm. And at least he had a good run. Some guys never do. Yeah,
well,
but so I'm not even with Gretzky's draft record. You think, oh, can he actually keep that up? Or because I think that's a real young man's game, but maybe he's got it. Maybe what we've seen is he does have a good eye for talent. If he's a strong negotiator, if he knows how to negotiate something Shirelli never knew how to do very well, one of the world's worst for a GM in that role, just constantly giving away too much and getting back too little. If Gretzky can do that, maybe he is in the running. What do you think of him?
Well, here's the bugaboo: having an eye for talent and having an eye for pro talent. Two different things. And the Oilers professional scouting, well, let's just call it the professional acquisition department, has been pretty woeful for a long time. And I mean, there's rumors out there, and who knows what's real and what's just made up speculation, of Gretzky having a big say in the trades for Petrovic and Manning. Well, that's a X mark on his resume, if so, but I mean, we don't know if so, but somebody does, because the whole idea of going out and bringing in proven pros is they're supposed to fill a hole and actually cover off a need. And those guys, I mean, anybody the Oilers brought in this year, from Spooner to Weidman to Manning to Petrovic to Zikov. And we're still waiting for Colby Cave to make any sort of an impact. I mean, those are the guys they brought in this year. they, you know, collectively that group just hasn't even come anywhere close to getting it done.
Yeah, it's the pro scouting has obviously failed this year. I don't know, like, if other teams have brought in better guys, if there were better guys available or not, but man, these guys have not worked out here at all. I mean, it's been a disaster, and it's why Shirelli's been, it's a big reason. Mm-hmm. If he had been able to find two or three better solutions. I mean, it's interesting, eh? Because Ray Ferraro was saying that he's watched Toby Reeder in the playoffs last year and didn't see an NHL player there. But when mm-hmm. he was signed here, everybody, including us, was excited. You know, that they might have found a diamond in the rough. And
well, he looked like a shirt.
We hadn't watched Tobias Reeder. Like, I'm always careful now because I myself,
mm-hmm. no, I you don't say it consistently anymore.
I just want to see them play before I decide. I wanted to see Brandon Manning play before I decided. And you know, we've now seen them. And
mm-hmm. well, I mean, Toby Reeder, though, he had the track record of being a middle six, certainly third line player. He had 4 years in a row of 12 to 16 goals in the NHL. 25-year-old with speed. He sort of seemed to fill a niche of what they needed, penalty killer. And he actually was pretty good, has been pretty good on the penalty killer. But zero goals, you know, through January, because now next game isn't until next month. It's just shocking. Like, what? Maybe there is something in the water. Maybe it's in the fountain in the dressing room or something. No, I'm kidding, of course. But it's strange that they bring in these pieces to fill these niches. And then, I mean, Eric Bélanger, you remember him. He had 8 years in a row of 35 points or something. Then he came here and he just completely collapsed as a player.
Yeah, but he was like, after. Yeah, 33. And
yeah, yeah.
They bring in these old, like, it always strikes me, like, if you want a fourth line center, what you really want more than anything else is just absolute hunger in that position. Mm-hmm. You want some player who's just going to go out there and grind.
Colin Fraser.
No, he was even past it.
I like Colin Fraser more than you did. That's why I bring him up.
Bring in someone who's 23 or 24. Maybe Colin Fraser was 26. But bring in someone who, like, this is their first NHL chance. This is their...
The younger Kyle Brodziak, the guy they gave away for nothing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring in that guy. Don't bring in the guy at the end of his career who's playing out the string and hoping to get one more contract. Like, you need hunger in that spot. And it's just a mistake to fill your fourth line grinder spots with old guys like Boyd Gordon, Korpikoski. I don't know. I don't like it. I've seen too much of it and it hasn't worked out. And it just strikes me that those spots should be... Go for those. Look for those AHLers who have been there for 2 or 3 years and are just willing to kill to be in the NHL, to do anything, whatever it takes, and play that player for 2 or 3 years and then get the next guy just like that. And then get the next guy just like that. Don't sign the guy who's been doing that 2 or 3 years and is burnt out and his body's used up and he doesn't have the talent to be in the NHL. Bring him in.
Yeah, all I know is every time the Oilers host some team from some other division or conference, they seem to have some guy that I never heard of, and he goes out and he plays a good game and scores a goal or something, right?
Isn't that the truth?
Where's that guy on our team?
Well, maybe he's in the AHL right now. You know, maybe that was that Malone guy and Patrick Russell and who was the third guy in that? The other, there's one more
Gambardella.
Guy. Gambardella. You know, maybe that should be your fourth line this year. Maybe that would have worked. Would have been a heck of a lot cheaper, I can tell you that, Bruce.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what we're going to keep coming back to, is that with the commitments they've made, whoever's the next GM, the salary cap era has completely changed the landscape. And the problem with the Oilers isn't that they're not willing to spend to the cap. They've been too willing to spend to the cap. They've spent to the cap on less than fully qualified players. And maybe it costs a little more to bring guys to Edmonton. I don't know. But, I mean, some of the guys they brought in by trade where they flat-out lost the trade and the guy's got term on his contract. I mean, how do you get out from that? How are they going to get rid of Ryan Spooner's contract or Brandon Manning's?
Well, they're not. Yeah.
They're going to buy him out and they're going to still eat some of it. Or they're going to trade him and retain and still eat some of it. Or they're just going to keep the guy around and eat all of it.
Well, how about this, Bruce? We're getting into like the future here. Let's leave this for another day.
Sure.
Let's later this week, let's get back together and talk about what the next GM faces, all of the
challenges problems. Facing
Yeah, that'll be our next podcast.
Keith Gretzky. Yeah, we can talk about that. I'm going to be looking at the roster in depth, top to bottom, here in the next day or so. I'll have a post on that. And you've been posting up a storm, my good man.
Yeah. Well, you can run that cap friendly buyout calculator smoking, and we'll get back to you. All right, Bruce. Thanks for talking today.
Yep. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.